everything in architecture in terms of relationship with clients. I mean, it starts with telling the clients what your values are, you know, what's important to you and what you think architecture should be. So the easiest way, I guess, is to if you are changing those values, is to be very sort of loud about that. And then you'd lose some clients because for them it may not be important, but it's, I guess those were going to be clients that it was always going to be a struggle to convince them that this is what they should be doing anyway.
That's Guy Shaw from Energy Architecture in Wellington. I'm Matthew Cutler-Welsh, and this is Homestyle Green. G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. Guy Shaw is one of those dedicated, inspiring people, and we're going to hear from him very shortly. Before we get on to today's show, I just want to give a shout out to some sponsors for the show. Very exciting to get some sponsors on board. And these are all mostly individuals in companies who are just passionate about building better performing houses. A lot of them are passive house builders or architects. And I put a little call out just recently to help support some of the people that help make this show possible. And I do make use of some people, particularly a virtual assistant in the Philippines. And she reached out recently to say that they are pretty severe conditions over there as part of the COVID-19. Makes our lockdown here in New Zealand look like a walk in the park compared with some of the conditions that they're faced with over there. So anyway, I put the call out and I was very chuffed, quite overwhelmed actually, with such a positive response for sponsorship for the show, which for this month will all be going to Amy and her family to show the appreciation and just to give them a little bit of a support to get through this this tough time. So I'd like to do a shout out to Robertson Architecture and Design. It's Murray Robertson. Now, Murray will be coming up in a future episode. He's doing some fantastic work getting into some passive house building, not just in residential, but also some education buildings as well. And also Claire Thomas from Alter Eco, who's a passive house designer in Australia. I'd like to give a very special thanks to Scott Stewart of Lab Design, and really excited to talk to Scott soon. Lab Design stands for Livable, Authentic and Bespoke, and I'll put the links to all these people in the show notes because they've got great services if you are looking at doing a passive house design or a build. Speaking of builders, I spoke to Jackson Digney in episode 210. He is the owner, founder and main builder at Enduro Builders, and really grateful for his support as well. So thank you for those people for supporting this show. If you want to support the show by any means, any amount that you desire, then there is a Patreon button on the front page of the website at homestylegreen.com. You can make a donation of any size, and that just helps with some of the operating costs of this show. It's not something that I do to make any money, but there are some expenses, and any contributions are greatly appreciated just to help keep the show going and get the word out. All right, now let's get on with the show. This week I have a conversation that I recorded a couple of weeks ago with Guy Shaw. And as I explained in the first part of the conversation, I met up with Guy a few years ago now when he had first returned back from the UK. Since then, Guy's built up his own company. He's also been a very active and very important member of the Passive House Institute New Zealand. He's been the secretary there, and he does a great job keeping us all in line on the board and keeping everything organised. And in his day job, he runs an architectural design firm practice in Wellington and has been responsible for some amazing SIP buildings around the country. So here is my conversation with Guy Shaw from Energy Architecture. I remember sitting down with you, meeting you the first time in a cafe in Wellington, and I think you'd just recently arrived back
from the UK and were interested in the landscape of sort of energy efficient design and architecture in New Zealand. And I can't even remember what year that was. Perhaps you know, when did you come back to New Zealand?
7 years ago, so 2013.
And prior to that, what had you been doing that led you to be asking those questions? What was it in your experience that made you interested in different architecture from just stock standard housing?
I guess it depends on how far back you want to go. I guess you could trace the roots back to when I was actually a high school student. I did an exchange in Germany, so I would have been 18. And I guess you could say I had quite a high opinion of what New Zealand was doing in terms of sustainability, and then went to Germany and discovered that actually there was a lot more that we could do.
Uh-huh.
Then when I was at university, there was a degree that went alongside architecture. This was at Victoria University in Wellington, and it was called Building Science. And it was an essential part, essentially, of what architecture should be, and yet it was sort of seen as something that you did if you didn't want to do design. So it was an interesting mix of work on thermal performance and acoustics and all sorts of building specific aspects of science. And it, even though I wasn't doing a degree, I sort of was friends with people who were, and it interested me at that point. So I left architecture school with sort of real passion for design, but also buildings that work. I worked for about 3 or 4 years in Wellington and was fortunate to work for some very talented architects who, for them, sustainability and good design was sort of a passion for them as well. But they had started out their own practice. I think it was in the 90s, and their aspiration was to do a lot of work on sustainable buildings as well, but they didn't manage to build the client base for it. But the conversations in the office always revolved around sustainability and design and marrying the two up. When my partner and I decided to go to the UK, part of the reason was to get experience in areas of architecture that just weren't seen in New Zealand, and got given a list of firms by a friend at Victoria who was from the UK, and they said, well, if you want to do any work in sustainability in the UK, try and work for these companies. And top of the list was actually a company that I'd never heard of. I mean, they're relatively small for the UK, only about 30 people. So when we arrived there, I waltzed up and said, hey, can I have a job? And this was 2007 and top of the market. And they said, sure. And so, within a week of arriving, I had work in a firm that was really kind of cutting edge in terms of cutting edge, but also a very long history. That firm had, their name was Energy Conscious Design. They had been around since the oil crisis in the 70s, I believe. So they'd kind of seen it all and they were still standing. And working for them, they started to pick up on the Passive House standard. So they'd done a lot of work in the UK with the UK's sort of holistic sustainability standards, called BREEAM and Code for Sustainable Homes, which is the equivalent of Homestar and Greenstar in New Zealand. And they expressed a bit of, they said that the feedback they'd had from clients had been that these buildings didn't always live up to expectations. You know, they weren't as comfortable and they weren't as energy efficient as everyone assumed they would be.
Interesting.
So around the time that I'd started working for them, they were actually looking around for something that was a bit more robust and reliable. And so they were picking up on the Pensafown standard, which at that point had about 20 years of experience, or sorry, 20 years in use in mainland Europe. And so they were thinking that that was probably a good approach to take. And it wasn't that they dropped one for the other, but they started using them together. So they would use, they would either look at doing certified passive house projects or using it, the modelling techniques alongside the ones built into the UK standards as a sort of a check and balance. But it was something that everyone was quite excited about in the office because it had this reputation. So we were able to say to clients, hey, you know, we can use this particular approach on your project, and it means that, you know, these will be the outcomes with a high level of certainty. I mean, I found that really exciting because that was the first time you're actually able to say, you know, if we do this, we will actually achieve these outcomes.
Yeah.
Which was always a bit hit and miss. You know, you were saying to clients, well, if we do this, we'll probably get this.
Yeah.
It wasn't always the case.
Had you heard of Passive House before that?
No, I'd never heard of it before I arrived in the UK. And I think at the time I arrived in the UK, there were no Passive House projects. So Eberron was sort of picking up on them at the same time, around the same time.
And so you became a Passive House designer, certified Passive House designer while there, or was that later?
No, it was while I was in the UK. So the UK equivalent of Brands, the BRE, the Building Research Establishment, they started running courses while I was there. So I attended, I think it was over about 2 weeks. So it was quite intense doing the coursework and then sitting the three-hour exam. But I never regretted it. It was definitely kind of not a change in direction, but certainly it felt like I suddenly had in my possession a whole lot more tools to actually achieve what I wanted. The projects I was working on.
And were the projects there? Was there a market established at that time in London?
So that would have been 2011, and at that point, I think the first few projects had been completed, and there suddenly became a huge amount of interest. Well, not huge, but that was where it started.
Enough to keep you doing some passive house work and using PHPP?
Yes. So I changed jobs in 2011, and I switched from this firm of ECD of about 30-odd people who were mostly doing public sector works to a firm of about 7 people doing mostly residential and multi-residential. And at that point, I think I worked almost exclusively on passive house projects.
Right. So you got a really good grounding and good level of experience. Probably, well, definitely a lot more than you would have done if you had stayed in New Zealand at that time.
Yes, and I was actually very fortunate as well. When I switched jobs, I was actually taking over the role from a passive house designer who was leaving London. So she gave me a whole lot of additional training on top of the course and the exam, and actually provided some coaching through the first few projects. So it was incredibly fortunate that that Kareem was there, because it's the sort of qualification where you have to start applying it immediately to get the most out of it, so that you don't just do the academic work on it. You actually have the sort of wheels on the ground experience of how you make it work.
Yeah.
That was incredibly fortunate.
What does the process, or what did the process of being a passive house designer look in that team of 7 people? Were you doing the whole project from sitting down with a client, getting their brief, and then doing the design and the PHPP, or were you just doing the PHPP calculations?
It was everything. So the firm of 7, there was the director and then three or four project architects, or in my case, project leaders, design team leaders, because at the time it was, that's a summit architectural designer. My role was doing most of the day-to-day work, but with oversight from the director. And it's kind of the easiest way to do it. So when you're doing the design, you've got this set of calculations running in the background, both mentally and also in the software, so that every design decision you're making, you're also providing some feedback on that decision. Or you've got some feedback on that decision coming through, essentially, so that the sort of thermal implications and comfort implications of every design is checked and rechecked as you go along. And having someone doing that work who's not the designer does tend to slow things down and make things a bit more complex. I mean, for some projects, that is the best arrangement. For projects up to a certain scale, it's like the ideal really is to have the designer performing these calculations as well, doing the modelling work.
So does that mean you're doing your sketching, you're doing your CAD, you're drawing on one window, and then you've also got your Excel spreadsheet calculations open side by side? Is that the sort of workflow?
I think it's as much a mental process as it is anything else. So you will check some of the assumptions that you're making at various points by doing the model in the first place and then refining it as you work through your various design stages. But once you've been doing passive house projects for a while, it becomes intuitive. It just becomes a background process to your normal design process.
Right.
So you understand the implications of various design decisions in terms of the architecture, but also in terms of the performance. So you've probably heard this before, but it becomes something integral to the design process rather than an add-on. And then you often find that when you do the models, that whatever you assumed in terms of the performance is not far off. You get a feeling for it. The modeling is just checking your assumptions.
Yeah. Just coming back to contrasting that experience of being able to jump straight into passive house work, back in when you were still in Wellington prior to that, you said earlier that you had this kind of vision of New Zealand being kind of clean and green and a bit of a leader in sustainability. What was the market reality at that time, early 2000s, for the demand for what you wanted to do as an architect in the building sector?
The market at that time was, without sounding too cruel, it was very much about style over substance. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of interest in materials, embodied energy, a lot of talk around natural materials and passive solar design, but not a lot of substance in terms of, well, how are our buildings performing and how can we do better? I had the chance to visit a whole lot of earth construction buildings in the early 2000s with my partner, who was doing a building science honours degree. And we looked at a variety of, rural detached residential. So one-off houses and sort of beautiful locations around Nelson and Takaka, I think. So We had Rand, there was Rand Earth House, various Adobe brick houses as well. And the prevailing sort of opinion that I performed, that was formed at the time was that these houses were beautiful and the materials were amazing, but whether they actually performed well, you know, whether they were warm and dry and comfortable and energy efficient was a bit hit and miss. And so, and a lot of these clients were quite disappointed. They sort of embarked on this mission to live more sustainably, inevitably they felt a bit disappointed with the outcome because it was, well, the house was still cold and drafty. And that to me was something I saw again and again throughout that time before we went to the UK, where there was this real passion and desire for more sustainability and better performance in the buildings, but it just wasn't occurring in any kind of reliable fashion.
Jumping forward a decade on, you've had that experience in the UK and you arrived back in Wellington. Had much changed?
Well, the passive house movement had established itself in New Zealand. I think by that point, the first passive house project had been completed in Auckland, and the Passive House Institute had been established as well. So it was really amazing to come back to. That was just, everything was happening. You know, there were all the suppliers were present in New Zealand in one form or another that would enable us to complete projects, and it fell straight into being able to set up a company and jump straight into doing some of the projects within a very short period of time. I think I started working on our first passive house project within a year of getting back. So it was, it was amazing. Things had changed quite a lot.
Because that must have been quite a big leap, because up until then you'd always been an employee at another firm. So not only were you coming back to a totally different market and different environment that you'd been in for 10 or so years, but the challenge of setting up a business, not being sure of how that was going to go, how did that feel?
I was very fortunate in that I had our first client or clients were a group of, I guess you could call them developers, but not in any traditional sense, based down in Queenstown. And the message from them, even when we were in the UK, was come back, establish yourself, and we'll start sending work your way. They were on the lookout for someone with experience in Passive House for the same reasons that I'd been on the lookout for something like the Passive House down in the first place. They wanted to be able to say to their clients, we can build you a house and it's going to be beautiful and it's going to be warm and dry and comfortable and energy efficient, and we can guarantee that.
Yeah.
They were at the time struggling to sell their approach to clients as developers. They were essentially wanting to sell a model to clients where it was come build with us and we'll deliver you architecture that is also a really healthy, beautiful place to live.
Right.
And that was rare in the market at the time.
So marketing on the performance as well as the appearance.
Yeah. So it was very much a case of you can have your cake and eat it. You can have, this is Queenstown, so all the architecture down there has to be something else just because of the landscape.
So very dramatic, alpine-ish. Yeah. But beautiful, and a fair bit of foreign influence down that way as well.
Definitely. It is a style of its own, or rather an area of its own sort of character, which you could say for most parts of New Zealand, but I think for for Queenstown and the sort of the Lakes District, it is definitely an amazing place to work. And it does sort of place high demands on you as a designer to make sure that what you're delivering is going to live up to the environment.
So it sounds like you were pretty confident going into your own business, having come back, because you had this indication that there was demand here and got a couple of projects under your belt pretty quickly. Where to from there? Was it easy to carry on, or how did you go about building a business as a sole trader, essentially?
Starting with a blank canvas, I mean, not completely blank in my case, as I say, because we had that first set of clients, but being able to establish a business, a practice around the passive house standard and essentially, you know, architecture that achieves everything that architecture should, we could essentially write out the rule book on how we were going to operate. We weren't trying to change the direction of an existing company. We weren't trying to convince an existing client base that this is the way we were going to go, that this is the way they should go. It was very much a case of, here we are and this is what we do. And if that's what you want, then come see us. We've been very fortunate in that we've never had to convince anyone that this is the approach that they should take. That decision had already been made before they even spoke to us.
What would you give as advice to someone who's just getting started, down the path of maybe passive house or even just wanting to be in that space of doing more sustainable design, more energy efficient, warm, dry, comfortable design, but they're sort of stuck in just standard design for the mass market at this stage? How can people break into that?
I think you have to shout very loudly that that is what you want to do, and that that is a priority for you. There's no shortage of people working in our industry who will say we can do anything for anyone. But I've always found that you get a lot more positive feedback from people when you say, this is what's really important to us. This is how we want to operate. And this is, we've only ever had to say no to one client for whom that wasn't a priority. I think our situation might be a bit unique in that, and that was how we started. So perhaps we don't have the best sense of what it is like for other people working in industry trying to change tech. But everything in architecture, in terms of relationship with clients, I mean, it starts with telling the clients what your values are, you know, what's important to you, and what you think architecture should be. So the easiest way, I guess, is to if you are changing those values, is to be very sort of loud about that. And then you'd lose some clients because for them it may not be important, but those were going to be clients that it was always going to be a struggle to convince them that this is what they should be doing anyway. You'll probably find that you've got a lot more clients for whom, you know, they're already primed for the for these kind of changes in the market. They may already be looking for it, but just needed someone to articulate it for them. We do get a lot of people coming to us who say, you know, I've been looking for something like this for quite some time, but someone's only just managed to articulate this for me.
Right. So by stating your values clearly, it helps attract people who know that they're looking for something but just don't necessarily know what it's called.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's very easy to talk about what we do in terms of just warm, dry, and comfortable. And we often find it ironic that we're actually even having to say that to people. You know, I mean, it's all buildings should be warm, dry, comfortable, and healthy.
Yeah.
The fact that we're working in a niche that actually delivers that just seems to say everything that is kind of wrong with the way that we build buildings otherwise.
Yeah. You say you want a house that actually works.
Yeah. I mean, one of my colleagues at the first place I worked in London was sort of say very loudly and very frequently that, you know, why the hell are we even letting these buildings in for, you know, competing for these various awards without them actually filling the basic requirements of being warm and dry and not leaking,
you know? Right, just because they look beautiful doesn't. Yeah, yeah.
He was very critical of a lot of the award-winning projects because he's just saying, well, it's sculpture. It's nothing to do with that looks like the most uncomfortable, unsustainable building ever. Why are we even considering that? It doesn't even meet the basics of shelter.
Yeah. I think that's a really apt distinction between sculpture and art versus a functional building that provides those basic requirements of keeping people healthy and dry and comfortable and the building lasting a decent amount of time as well. Which, like you say, it should be a no-brainer. And the fact that you're having to make that distinction does point to a problem in the industry. Do you think that's, you've with the experience that you've had overseas, do you think that's everywhere? Is that a common problem around the world?
I believe so. Most legislation around buildings, including our own, has at its core some very noble purposes about what buildings should be.
Mm-hmm.
I think our Building Act's language is that buildings should be enablers of well-being or some such language, but it's the execution where things start to fall down.
Yeah.
If you take some of our building code clauses and reflect them, sort of cast a lens over them, using that higher purpose from the Building Act, you find them very deficient.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's uncommon. I mean, I think the UK building codes and certainly parts of mainland Europe are further along towards better performing buildings than ours are. But everyone still has what's described as this performance gap between what buildings should be and how they actually perform once they're completed.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's why you have to look elsewhere to other methods and other building standards to actually achieve that end.
Yeah. What's the outlook? Obviously, we're in a pretty unique situation immediately with COVID, coronavirus, you know, that's going to change things markedly. But if we get looking beyond that sort of 5, even 10 years down the track, what do you see? What would you like to see happening in the industry?
Well, the first thing I'd like to see is how does it change how we actually measure the performance of buildings and how that is communicated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that is, we don't use very clear metrics at all in our building code. So it makes it very hard for most of the industry to actually talk to their clients about what their expectations are in terms of building performance and to actually see whether what they've got and how that measures up.
Yeah.
I mean, the simplest metrics are the one that underpins the Passive House Standard. I mean, the Passive House Standard didn't invent it. They just adopted it. And it's just kilowatt hours per meter squared per year of heating demand. You know, how much energy will it take to maintain this building at a comfortable temperature for a year, you know, or throughout the year? And it's incredibly simple to take those figures and put them in front of clients and ultimately building users and say, well, this is what's going to happen. This is how it's going to perform. And you can compare those figures between buildings easily and you can use it to determine sort of energy bills. And it also makes it very easy as well to then set tighter and tighter targets in terms of how we want buildings to perform, you know, if we actually start measuring things properly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're not measuring it properly, then you can't really change the outcomes at all.
Yeah,
your tools are too shoddy. I mean, that's the change I'd like to see now. There's no reason why we can't just jump on top of that now, just to have some clarity. And then, you know, within a 5 to 10 year period, as I say, we can start setting better and better targets in terms of how we want our buildings to perform based on those metrics.
Yeah,
I mean, it's very dry, but so say once you get it out of the way, then it just becomes integral to how we design.
Yeah,
so say you become a practitioner for whom this is just intuitive. You know, it's like, well, this is our target, and this is how we achieve it.
Yeah, this is what we do.
Yeah.
Where can people get in touch with you, Guy, if they want to see some of your work or maybe get you to do some work for them?
Well, the website's always a good place to start for us. Energyarchitecture.co.nz. We're based in Wellington, but I think we've done work almost everywhere now across the country.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome.
It's quite a privilege.
Yeah, and you've got some pretty nice examples that show up on other people's platforms and also your own with some images that people can look at, some of the buildings and projects that you've been involved in.
Yeah, we've got a lot of work that's in progress at the moment. So we've got the projects that are on our website at the moment are 4 favourites from the last few years, but
yeah.
I've lost count of how many we've got in the works at the moment, but I think it's about 8 or 12 around the country.
Yeah, awesome.
At various stages. Obviously, there's a few on hold at the moment with the current situation, but it's still looking good for a lot of those to be completed. And they're all a mix of some passive house projects and some projects where you're targeting what's called the low energy standard, which is second tier to passive house, but still immeasurably improved on building code. And we do have people who come to us and say, look, I'm not looking for a passive house, but can you do something better? And then we start to have a conversation with them using those metrics I described earlier, which makes things really easy because we can give them some really clear guidelines on how the things are tracking in terms of the design process. And because I mean, passive house is not something that you achieve by accident. So if someone hasn't set that as a desire at the outset, then you don't often end up there at the end of it.
Yeah.
But at least if you are having a conversation with someone about what their expectations are and then giving them some comparators in terms of the passive house standard and building code, normally their eyes pop out of the head when you tell them what the performance of building code buildings are. Mm. I mean, I just think that's the hilarious thing is when you apply these metrics to the building code, you end up with some terrible, terrible numbers that people just aren't aware of. You know, it's not out there in conversation. You know, like how much energy you have to pump into a house if you don't make some attempt at trying to improve on this minimum that we've set.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey, thank you, Guy. Unfortunately, I ran out of time, but pleasure to speak with you, and it's awesome work. And I do hope things that don't get put on hold for too long, and you're able to keep trucking on into it and keep growing what you're doing, because it's really good stuff. So thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you.
Guy Shaw there from Energy Architecture. He's based in Wellington, but he does some work all around New Zealand. So I'll put some links in the show notes so you can catch up with him and see some of the fantastic work that he's been involved in. As I mentioned at the top of the show, really grateful for the sponsors for this show. We will be hearing from a couple of those in the near future. That's Claire Thomas from Alta Eco. She's a passive house designer in Australia, and also Murray Robertson from Robertson Architecture Design. He's based here in New Zealand. Real special thanks to Scott Stewart from Lab Design, and also Enduro Builders, who are the makers of some fantastic and probably the leading builders of passive house buildings in Australia right now. Check those guys out. Let them know that I sent you. Show your appreciation to them. And As I said as well, if you want to support the show, you can do that by clicking on the Patreon button on the homepage. Very easy, and any contributions are greatly appreciated, which whatever amounts you feel is appropriate. Also, spread the word. If you enjoy the show, give it a shout out in Apple Podcasts or wherever you hear this. Make sure you subscribe, but also let other people know and give us a rating and a review as well. Really helps increase the reach and our audience. Thank you very much for tuning in. Now go make a better place to live.